It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 87, we discuss beIN Sports knocking on heaven's door, details about NBC Sports taking the Premier League on the road around the US, our thoughts on the opening weekend of Bundesliga TV action, follow-up impressions of TNT's Champions League coverage, and we have a bunch of letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by my co-host Kartik Krishnayar from Florida to India to London and back. Welcome back, Kartik. We missed you last week's on last week's episode. The question I have for you, Kartik, is any feedback or any discussions overseas about what's going on with American soccer, or any impressions from those you met overseas about how soccer in the U.S. is going?
Yeah, India in particular, it was an interesting conversation because they're having similar problems with a league that's a closed league competing with a league that's an established league that's a more open league. And oddly enough, in India, it seems like FIFA wants to enforce their statutes in a way that they're not willing to do in the United States. So there's a precedent being set in India, and people in India were shocked when I told them that as part of the that there was no quid pro quo for the U.S. being awarded hosting rights for the 2026 World Cup. They had assumed that meant that Major League Soccer would have to open up, that MLS was going to have a second and third division. They don't know the entire picture with USL, NPSL, NASL. These acronyms don't mean anything in India, but they know MLS, the soccer people there, and were a little bit shocked and felt like maybe FIFA's picking on them instead of picking on the United States. And the same could be said for Australia. In the UK, I think the conversation that I had with people about American football, American soccer, revolved around the Columbus Crew entirely.
Really? And, wow.
Yeah, and the shock about that relocation, because what British fans or British analysts who covered Major League Soccer had been led to believe was that, yes, there had been relocations early in MLS's and contractions of clubs early in MLS's existence because they were trying to stabilize the league, but that it was Major League Soccer was distinctly different because it was a football league and had clubs and clubs that have development academies, that have women's teams in some cases, that have youth teams, have teams playing in the second division or the third division in many cases. And Columbus has a great development academy. The assumption in the UK was they were being built out just like British or English football clubs, even though they were in a closed league system, and that you wouldn't be able to uproot a club because there would be an academy attached to a club. There would be a women's team attached to a club. There would be all of this, which I must say, quite frankly, Chris, was my assumption a year ago also. As much as I dislike MLS's business structure, mm-hmm. I thought that, well, you have clubs investing locally in developing players in women's game and B teams and all of this stuff. That means you have to move like four or five things if you relocate. So no club will relocate. Columbus has a great DA, as I mentioned, but it hasn't stopped anyone. And I think there is a fear again in Europe about this La Liga thing. That was the other thing I picked up in the UK about La Liga playing games in the US. People don't seem to be terribly amused by it. And I'm sure we'll discuss that more in the coming weeks.
Yeah, that's interesting. And actually, it's interesting to hear about the Columbus Crew, about that being a big story in the UK. I wouldn't think it would get outside of these boundaries in terms of a news story. But I mean, all the way around the United States, it's one of the top stories. Whether you're into MLS or not, you probably have an opinion about it. But interesting to hear that it's branching overseas in terms of being a topic of discussion, and I'm sure it's going to be a topic of discussion for the next few months, to say the least. So, Kartik, I know you've been traveling a lot, so you missed a lot of the action that we saw on U.S. television. But what did you catch this past week? And any highlights? Any observations that stand out for you?
Yeah, I'm really disappointed. I've missed the first 2 weeks of Serie A on ESPN, and I've heard pretty good things about the team of Mark Donaldson, who, thank you for sitting in for me last week. to Mark, the team of Mark Donaldson and Matteo Benetti, that they've already kind of clicked, and there's a lot of good chemistry, which just reinforces how good ESPN is at broadcasting these sort of matches. I'll see my first Serie A broadcast on Sunday. They've got a match on ESPN News, the Napoli match, and I'm looking forward to that. And then I assume that'll be Donaldson and Benetti as well. So I've missed that. The Premier League, I missed the entire weekend. I did watch Monday, and I have to say I was a little disappointed NBC in their post-match show of Spurs and Manchester United. I was pleased that even though it was a Monday game, because it was two of the top three from last season, they sent Arlo White to call the match. I was disappointed by the post-match show. There wasn't the level of analysis I thought there'd be. It was a half-an-hour show packed with commercials, and they got out of there quickly. And that, to me, was very surprising, because generally in these sorts of big matches, they do such a knock-up job post-game. And because it was a Monday, for whatever reason, it was really kind of a substandard post-game show by NBC standards.
I would say, though, Kartik, there too, that, again, we don't share our notes about what you've watched and what I've watched and my thoughts and things, and vice versa, your thoughts. But the Man United Spurs game post-match, the thing that kept coming to my mind was, I feel sorry for the Spurs fans, because like 95% of the conversation was about United and what the defensive mistakes, and mostly about Mourinho. And I understand Mourinho at this point in time is the big story. But I mean, fair play to Spurs. I mean, what a fantastic performance in that second half. And there was very, very little discussion about Spurs, even with Rebecca Lowe saying, hey, don't worry about it. Wait a minute, Spurs fans, we'll get to you in a minute. I don't think they ever did.
No, they didn't. And I'm really kind of perplexed by the disrespect for Tottenham in general in the media, more in the U.S. than in the U.K. But U.K., I see it. I saw it, too, when I was there. They're just not considered a club at the level of the other, quote, big six clubs. Yet Spurs are the only club in England that have finished in the top three each of the last three seasons. And this stat will blow your mind. They have finished ahead of Liverpool in the table eight of the last nine seasons, including last year. So I think there's just because it's Spurs and we like to make jokes about things being Spursy and they never win anything, I think it now has infected media coverage. And ESPN FC, similar, they did talk about Spurs a little bit, but again, it was 80% Man United, what Mourinho is doing wrong, and fiddling with his team and his narcissistic rants after the match and his behavior, and very little about Pochettino making clear changes at halftime to change the trajectory of that match. And also, for me, and I, you know, I get a lot of things wrong. I don't pretend like I get everything right, but before the season, when the transfer window closed and Spurs didn't make a signing, Chris, you might remember I tweeted out, well, they got Lucas Moura in January. I know how good he was at PSG before things went downhill for him there. It's a new signing for me. I think he'll come good now that he's settled in England. And he's come good. Absolutely. And he really came good in that game.
Oh, so, yeah, what a performance. Well, I will say that actually pre-match I did enjoy the coverage from NBC where they had Mark Clattenburg on. And there was a segment where they talked about they asked Mark, tell us, give us some insight about Jose Mourinho. What is he really like in person? What's he like behind the scenes when he's having kind of one-on-one discussions? And that was enlightening to see and hear the things that Mark had said. That's something you don't get anywhere else, really. And that I did enjoy.
Yeah. And then, so I was disappointed in that. I understand that Man United's a story and American Man United fans are hitting the panic button after three matches. And look, but this is, I have to say this, there has been a consistent critique of Pochettino through the last few years that Spurs cannot win these big matches away from home against the other top sides. They did beat Man City away from home a few years ago, or drew them and got a point, but that they can't go to Man United. He had lost four straight there. They can't go to Chelsea until late last season, but then people are saying, well, Chelsea was collapsing anyway under Conte, last days of the Conte regime. They can't get 3 points at the Emirates, even though they're clearly have been better than Arsenal now for a few seasons. So this was really a noteworthy result. And they didn't just get a 1-0 or a 2-1. They got a 3-0. Yes, the first half, Man United were slightly better, slightly the better team. I don't buy Mourinho's analysis that they should have been up 3-0. But the second half, Pochettino got a tactical change and the tactical variation between three and four man back lines and midfield setups for Spurs, whether they play with someone wide or whether they just pack everybody in the center of midfield, is also interesting. And no analysis of that. And I feel like every time I'm sounding like a Spurs fan this morning, but I feel genuinely aggrieved because this also applies to ESPN, not just NBC. Every time Spurs fails in an FA Cup semifinals, or they lose a match at Manchester City, or they lose a match at Arsenal, we hear about, well, they can't get over the hump. They're Spursy. They just don't have enough. They have a wage cap. Pochettino, maybe he's not an elite manager. We hear all this analysis. When they actually do win 3-0 at Old Trafford, worst defeat at home for a Jose Mourinho team in his managerial history, we don't get any of the flip analysis. So I am a little bit disappointed by that. And I would urge people who listen to this podcast who are in the media to think about that, that maybe the coverage of Spurs, we just, because it's Spurs, we have a stereotype and we react based on that stereotype.
On the other hand, though, Kartik, NBC knows that Man United drives ratings. And in previous seasons, when I think it was under Van Gaal, when United was doing really, really poorly, maybe the Moyes season, ratings dived on NBC Sports as a result. And that's the thing, though, too, just for our listeners, is this Sunday, the game that was scheduled to be on NBCSN, which is Watford against Spurs, has been bumped to NBC Sports Gold. Reason being is that Man United against Burnley has been switched to Sunday because Burnley's playing in the Europa League. And as a result, that game now, the Burnley-Man United is on NBCSN. So that's the thing, is NBC knows that United drives ratings, and the vast majority of fans listening or watching that Spurs-United game were United fans. So that's part of it too. At the end of the day, it comes down to business, which is a shame. It should be more about merits on the pitch. Now, Kartik, what about TNT? So I know that the last couple of podcasts we've been talking about TNT's UEFA Champions League broadcasts and our first impressions. Did you get a chance? Because I know you've been away. So did you get a chance to watch TNT? And if so, what did you think so far?
Yeah, I made it a priority this week, actually, to record everything on TNT, even while I was at the office, and come home and watch it. I'm disappointed, genuinely, that I forgot to do that. This is the thing about the Champions League and the Super Cup starting so soon, that I went away and I forgot to set that stuff on my DVR. Whereas I had set every NBC Premier League program to DVR, so I have a ton of stuff that from the previous 2 weeks on NBC I still need to get to. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. So I think the presentation is a little clunky with Steve Nash and Stu Holden in LA and Kate Abdo and whoever is flanking her in Atlanta. I think that's a little bit awkward. I don't like the fact that they dress down and try and be really hip and be really like Fox. And the presentation to me, it's not quite as... The production isn't quite as annoying as Fox, but it's certainly not ESPN or NBC levels. That having been said, actually listening to the analysis on Tuesday and Wednesday from Holden and Nash in particular, but also from Charlie Davies, he was in on Tuesday. Yesterday it was Tim Howard, and we're taping this on Thursday, by the way. Yesterday it was Tim Howard and Carlos Bocanegra. It's actually pretty good. I think that they're much better prepared. And again, we can look at Holden and Abdo, because they're also on Fox, they seem much better prepared on TNT and much more prepared to actually talk about issues in European football rather than on a Fox when everything was a discussion of what happens in the U.S. or in MLS. Now, the thing I would say regarding their pregame show, it's an hour, which is, I thought, okay, we definitely need an hour. And I think we probably will when we get to the group stage because of the level of games. However, it seemed like a bit of overkill for play-in games, essentially, for third-round matches, which led them to end up talking about other things. On Tuesday, it was Jose Mourinho for a long time, which is fine because I think that's what was on everyone's mind. And NBC and ESPN, ESPN FC and NBC did do that well on Monday night, talk about Jose. And then we got to a point on Tuesday where TNT was next on deck. And Holden and Nash decided to really engage on Mourinho and on Manchester United. I mean, and they are in the Champions League, right? We don't know if Mourinho will still be their manager when they start their Champions League campaign.
Right.
Wednesday it was Clint Dempsey filling time, and I appreciate that they spent a lot of time talking about Clint Dempsey's career at Fulham and at Spurs. I fear if it had been Fox, that they would have talked about him in Seattle and New England and the U.S. national team exclusively. So it's an awkward thing, Chris. I don't like the presentation. I don't really like the production. I don't like the studio. I don't like the split studio either. But sitting and listening to the analysis, I think it was really good. I think it's a major upgrade over Fox. And after all, you know, for someone like me, I want to see good production. I want to see nice graphics and all of that. But I'm more interested in hearing analysis about soccer and pundits who inform me and can give me some insight into European football, since this is the UEFA Champions League. And I think TNT has hit that in a way Fox hasn't. So I'm on the whole pretty upbeat about it and have been impressed by Steve Nash. He knows his stuff. I don't know if he's over preparing because he's a basketball guy first, one of the greatest NBA players of my generation, or if he just genuinely knows a lot about European football, because we know he grew up in a soccer family and he's a fan, but he knows his stuff. I'm very impressed by him thus far.
My only concern is longevity. So we've had now probably like about 2 or 3 weeks, probably three weeks of programming from the pre-match. I mean, I'm talking about the pre-match specifically. And we've had the banter, the back and forth, kind of Stuart Holden picking on Carlos Bocanegra. A lot of inside jokes, which I don't think is very funny, but it is what it is. But my concern is longevity, whether they'll be able to keep that up and keep it fresh so that 3 months from now, that what are they going to talk about if they're not having banter? Or what are they going to talk about if there's no transfer rumors? Which that was the thing on Wednesday, is that there is a lot of filler. They had a segment on transfer rumors, most of which will probably not happen. A lot of guesswork, a lot of conjecture. To me, it was a complete waste of time, just complete filler there. They're trying to be funny and entertaining to watch instead of Fox, who were trying to be knowledgeable. Overall, I've been impressed so far with Turner. It's not perfect by any means. I still think it's a work in progress. I think the split studio is okay. I mean, it looks like it's down to kind of logistics in terms of kind of having talent based in LA and then talent based in Atlanta, and rather than flying them back and forth across the country to be in one studio, splitting them up so that, you mean, in terms of resources and keeping costs down. I'm okay with that. Overall, it's been a breath of fresh air, but it's not perfect. So maybe that's something they can work on, but we'll have to wait and see once we get to the group stage, and at that point, how good it is or not. Charlie Davis, or Charlie Davies, as Americans say, it's interesting too, because he's going to be on some of the Bundesliga coverage for Fox. So I think he's going to be one of the student talent that's going to be there, I think, next month. So that'll be interesting to see how he does there too. I thought he was pretty good. Overall, the talent's been pretty decent. All right, Kartik, anything else that stood out for you this past week?
Chris, I also want to point out the TNT post-game show, because I thought that was very good compared to what we used to have on Fox. Very good. It's the same crew. It's a lot of banter, but it's much more complete. It's much more analytical, and it's much more informative than Fox's shows were. Now, again, when we get to the group stage and there are more highlights to show and there's more you have to cram into that half an hour, maybe we don't get the level of analysis. But even with clubs like Red Star Belgrade and Red Bull Salzburg and Benfica, et cetera, these last few days, we've gotten a really good dose of analysis, again, particularly from Holden and Nash post-match. They understand what they're watching. They're able to break it down, and they're able to analyze it. That hasn't always been the case on Fox. And this goes back to, I'll leave on this point. Fox has had all these issues, but I wonder if Stuart Holden, and he's really good as the flanking John Strong. I think he's gotten better and better. I wonder if they may have made a mistake not putting him in the Champions League studio, because he's giving a level of analysis pre and post game that you didn't get on that show at all once Eric Winalda was shown the door. Mm. So I wonder if they may maybe used him incorrectly. But then again, if they were going to do native announcers, you then take your best commentator out of the booth and put him in the studio. So maybe, again, it's a Fox problem, and we should be happy they don't have the rights anymore.
Yeah, I think it's to me, Lalas would have been the one to drop off the set and put Holden in. But Lalas has seniority, and he's kind of the big star at Fox. So I guess Fox couldn't really do that. But definitely good thoughts there, Kartik. In terms of what I watched this past week, the one highlight for me was the match of the week for me was Napoli against Milan. Watched this on ESPN Plus with Dave Farrar and Gary Bertels commentating. It's interesting watching this match because in terms of the stereotype about Italian defenses being so rigid and so strong and so fantastic, the defense was all over the place on this one. So it ended up being a really entertaining 3-2 game and lots of defensive errors, but Napoli held out there for a good opening win for a good opening home win for Carlo Ancelotti. I did watch the Bundesliga opening game of the season. This is interesting. I think we probably talked about this probably a year ago, but I forgot about it, where they have an opening ceremony before the game kicks off. And it feels like it's like the World Cup kind of pre-show or the UEFA Champions League pre-show where they have songs and dancing and stuff like that. But to me, that always feels really, really fake and inauthentic. But going into the match, the on-screen graphics with the team lineups for Bayern against Hoffenheim, fantastic. They had used augmented reality, so the players looked like they were on the pitch and different angles. That was amazing. So hopefully we'll see that throughout the Bundesliga season. Overall, the game itself, what a nightmare for VAR. I mean, the first game of the season, and the Bundesliga has had problems in the past with VAR, as has Major League Soccer and other leagues. The World Cup was kind of a shining example of how to do it right, but not perfectly. But what a mess up in this one. You had Ribery diving. VAR didn't call it or didn't signal it to the referee or didn't catch it. Whatever happened, we don't know. And Bayern gets the penalty kick and goes on to win the game. But I felt a bit cheated in this game, really, because it was one of those things that it felt really, very fluky for Bayern to win this one. They had the penalty. They had one shot that went into the goal. It was a fluke. That was a complete deflection. But overall, it just felt like inevitable that Bayern would win this game, almost like Man United in previous years or decades, where you felt that all the chips were kind of on their side and they were going to win this no matter what. But overall, pretty decent game, and they had Russ Dyer and Ian Joy on the commentary on this one. And the TV ratings, Kartik, we'll get to that in a little bit, but we'll talk about Bundesliga TV ratings from the opening weekend. Last but not least, I saw This Is Football, which was Joe Scarborough talking about Liverpool-Chelsea from last season. Lots of interviews and discussion in the build-up to the game that was, I think, towards the end of this most recent season at Stamford Bridge. Really, again, captured the culture and the passion of the supporters and did a really great job. I think I watched that on Sunday. So in addition to that, I watched a ton of soccer games, but those are the highlights for me. All right, guys. Well, football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I've been looking the last week or so, looking at concert tickets coming up in the South Florida area, and it's really easy to use, and you can just scroll through and find it within seconds. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. That's promo code WSTPOD for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news, and we've got a big one to start off with.
Yeah, an unfortunate one to discuss, which is the situation with beIN Sports. They're in danger of being off cable systems completely. This week, I'm sure our listeners are all aware of this now, and a lot of you may have been scrolling on your program guide on Monday or Tuesday and seeing beIN Sports disappear. That's what happened with me. I have DirecTV. But beIN Sports is off of DirecTV and Uverse, another carriage dispute. Once again, beIN Sports is finding itself on the back foot, trying to rally public opinion, particularly of soccer fans, to its defense, using social media, using press release and the media. Chris, this is now becoming a crisis, and I think it's a crisis for La Liga also, because this is coinciding, as I wrote about for another publication, not for World Soccer Talk this week. This is happening at the very same time as Serie A has found itself on ESPN, and you don't want to overreact and say Serie A is going to overtake La Liga as the number two European league in the country, but if this isn't resolved quickly and either beIN is back on these cable systems or they somehow find a way to break the contract with beIN, La Liga does, it very well could happen in the near future, which is a terrible thing for the Spanish league that I think anchored beIN's programming lineup and really benefited from beIN's commitment to the league to elevate the broadcast, the bumper programming. They've done such a good job presenting the league in a way Gol TV did not, the previous rights holder. But this is a crisis now. This is similar to what Gol TV went through as they began to really fall off the map in the U.S. market and lose rights to things.
So the full list is beIN Sports is no longer on Comcast Xfinity, DirecTV, AT&T Uverse, and DirecTV Now, which is the streaming service from AT&T, from DirecTV. So you've got four major players where beIN Sports is not on. The likelihood of beIN Sports going back on Comcast is practically zero after beIN Sports filed a FCC complaint against Comcast in March, which was dismissed. So I don't see Comcast and beIN Sports making any type of resolution in the future. I think that's over. DirecTV and Comcast is the number one cable TV provider in the country. DirecTV is the number one satellite provider in the country, and they're not on there. And then you've got the Uverse, which is smaller. DirecTV Now, which is one of the fastest growing streaming services out there. So it's Mayday situation, really, and it's not looking good. I mean, if you're a subscriber to any of those four providers and you want to watch La Liga, I would seriously consider making some changes, either going to another TV provider or cutting the cord and going to a streaming solution, because it's in jeopardy. For La Liga, this is a huge blow. I mean, this is something that right now, you could say easily that Serie A is in more homes than beIN Sports is. Without DirecTV and without Comcast, beIN Sports, we understand, is probably in less than 10 million homes. ESPN, even if it's one game a week, is in, 85 million homes. So it's a tragedy across the board. The one thing, Kartik, I would mention is that, and I love beIN Sports, so I love watching the channel, I love the programming, I like the extra, I like the locker room, I like the talent that they have. They always get kind of a bad rap against them, but I'm honestly, sincerely a big fan of beIN Sports, and I think they've done a great service to the sport in this country. But their campaign on social media is, we talked about this a few weeks ago, is too late. And I don't think that beIN Sports has a good relationship with soccer fans in the United States on social media. There isn't I'm not hearing a ton of people complaining and saying I love beIN Sports. I can't believe that you're taking it off my cable or satellite service. Yes, there are some people that are like that, but there's very much a love-hate relationship, I think, among soccer fans with beIN Sports, and a lot of it goes back to U.S. men's national team games, the away games, those big games, the games against Trinidad and Tobago, and them not being able to watch those games. So, and historically speaking, I don't think beIN Sports has a really good relationship with its community, with the soccer fans. So now that they're going social media, now they're trying to encourage people to go ahead and participate in this campaign, I think it's backfiring. I don't think it's working at all. The biggest tell, Kartik, that I can give on this in terms of what the situation is that I contacted beIN Sports this week to ask them for their opinion. I said to them I was writing a story about beIN Sports being in danger, losing the number one cable subscriber, to TV provider and satellite provider, and please give me your comments, please give me some of your feedback or your analysis about this so I can go ahead and report that. I did not hear one word back, not even a phone call, not even an email, which is very rare. And to me, that tells me that they're worried, that they are panicking, and they don't know what to say. And to me, if I'm beIN Sports, or if I'm a subscriber that loves beIN Sports and I'm going to watch La Liga, I think everyone needs to look for other options, because right now it's a disaster. Moving on to rosier news, or at least happier news, NBC Sports has announced that they're going to have a Premier League Fan Fest in September, September 29th to be exact, in Washington, D.C. And this is going to be part of what they're calling their Premier League Mornings Live. And it's going to be on the road across the United States. There will be other places that they're going to announce soon, but right now it's September 29th in Washington, D.C. It's going to be a fan festival, very similar to what they had last year in New York City, where they're going to have the whole crew. So Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, Carl Martino, etc., on set, as well as Premier League mascots, special guests, and also big giant screens so you can watch your matches there. And all of that's going to be televised live across the United States. And I think the matches that day, I think it's going to be West Ham against Man United, as well as Chelsea-Liverpool that day. So it's going to be a really great atmosphere. Kartik, to me, this is a fantastic idea. Is that, you mean, you've got a rabid fan base, but rather than just having that relationship through television, that you're going to go in major cities, going to have fan fest, and really kind of get, in the faces of soccer fans, and probably, create even more loyalty and more brand awareness, and attract more fans to your product, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think when you look at how NBC has kind of methodically built their Premier League operation, now taking the show on the road is going to just get more people to gravitate and goodwill from soccer fans for NBC. This is year three of the 6-year deal. So renewal's coming up pretty soon, and I think one thing we learned last time, when for an hour or two it appeared like maybe NBC was going to lose the rights to the ESPN Fox combination, is that there is such a bond between NBC and the Premier League fans in this country that at that point had been developed in a year and a half or 2 years when that rights renewal came up. So this is just going to further cement that.
Yeah, totally. And I can envision, Liga MX fans being, crazy passionate fans. If Univision did something similar and had appearances, nationwide, massive fan bases, Major League Soccer too. In certain cities, I could see the fans coming out and getting behind, Fox, their coverage, whoever it may be. But it's a great, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to do it. So it's really... and kudos to the Premier League. Actually, the Premier League is working with NBC Sports to do this across the country. So I'm looking forward to finding out after September 29th where they'll be headed. We'll have to wait and see on that one. And as soon as we know, we'll run the story at worldsoccertalk.com, and I'm sure talk about it on this podcast. Kartik, what's next in the news section?
Yeah, so streaming TV services are now used by 5% of U.S. households with Wi-Fi, which is just a growing number that your next news item, Chris, will kind of explain that. There's a direct correlation between the uptick in streaming TV services and the downtick in subscribers on cable systems for specific channels that cover sports.
Yeah, some of those numbers are the and this is from July to August. So this is TV subscribers that subscribe to these channels. ESPN lost 290,000 subscribers. NBCSN lost 224,000 subscribers. FS1 lost 147,000. And the biggest drop of all was ESPNU, who lost 632,000. So as those numbers of TV subscribers decrease and we're seeing streaming services increase, you can see why ESPN is launching ESPN Plus and why Fox has, well, Fox Soccer Match Pass, but you have to wonder if Fox will have maybe their own streaming product in the future, or maybe they're working on something. NBC Sports Gold and, you mean, Bleacher Report Live, et cetera, they're really kind of building for the future, while currently and in the past, TV subscribers are going way down as people cut the cord. Okay, let's move on to TV ratings, Kartik, and some interesting numbers from this past week. So I'll lead with the biggest number from this past week, and that was Liverpool against Brighton on NBC on Saturday in that 12:30 to 2:30 time slot, and that was 831,000 viewers, pretty decent number there. Arsenal-West Ham had 537,000 viewers. Newcastle-Chelsea, 535,000 viewers. And then Man United against Spurs on Monday during office hours, that one had 395,000 viewers, which is pretty decent for a Monday 3 p.m. Eastern kickoff. Some of the other numbers, we had the Bundesliga opening weekend and the two most high-profile games that weekend. The opening game, Bayern Munich against Hoffenheim on FS1 on Friday, had 97,000 viewers. And this is a similar story that we've talked about, I think, last year, for the last 12 months, is that Bayern Munich, and actually really the Bundesliga, has such a difficult time breaking that 100,000 viewer barrier. And here's another example. Opening game of the season, you would think there'd be huge anticipation for this. Yes, Hoffenheim doesn't have a huge fan base, but Bayern Munich obviously does, 97,000 viewers. Now, this past Sunday was the biggest game of the weekend, arguably, and that was Borussia Dortmund against RB Leipzig on over-the-air Fox, the big Fox. And, of course, with Pulisic and all the fanfare about this game on big Fox on a Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern, which is a great time slot, that had 395,000 viewers. Which to me, Kartik, my opinion on this one is that's a pathetic number to have on over-the-air Fox. You're having the same number of people that are watching Man United against Spurs on a Monday, during office hours on a cable channel, than you are over the air Fox, which you should be getting at least, minimum 500,000 viewers. And even with Pulisic, and even with Dortmund, and even with RB Leipzig, 395,000 viewers is just not good enough.
Yeah, I cannot explain what Fox is doing with the Bundesliga. This is year four now, Chris. The numbers have only gone up slightly. There's been a slight uptick, which I think is related largely to Pulisic and maybe some other American players, and Marco Fabian and some of the Mexican players in the league. You're looking at a number with two of the higher profile clubs in the league, okay, and with the best American player currently, and with arguably the best American coach is an assistant coach for RB Leipzig. Let's not forget about Jesse Marsch. On a Sunday at noon, getting lower numbers than Premier League games that are on cable channels. And this is over the air. People feel like, and I'm just going to take a point of personal privilege here, Chris. A lot of people who listen to the show and follow me on Twitter feel like I'm unfairly harsh on the Bundesliga. And you just can't make this stuff up. Their numbers, their lack of ability to leverage their position in the United States market, the arrogance I've seen at times from people associated with the Bundesliga about their relationship with the American audience and quite frankly, their dismissiveness of English football in the Premier League adds up, and they're just not getting anywhere. This number was stunning to me. I mean, all the other numbers you read, that they're interesting, but this number was an absolute shock to me. 500,000 minimum, I agree. I thought maybe it'd be 650 or 700, given the circumstances around this match, and it was the opening weekend. There's not much more to say about it.
Yeah, my prediction is going to be once this contract is up in, I think, 2020, is that the Bundesliga will be on, I don't know, ESPN Plus, Bleacher Report Live, or DAZN, or I don't know, Goal TV. I don't know. It just it seems to be that it's not meant for television because, Yeah, I mean, I partly blame Fox for this in terms of the lack of promotion and publicity, but there's bigger issues here too. And for whatever reason, the Bundesliga doesn't seem willing to really be honest with themselves and really kind of do something to change this because it's not working.
Let me say something. It's not just Fox, okay? It is the Bundesliga as well, and it is the attitude of some of the German clubs towards the American market, the German clubs other than Bayern Munich. And I'll just leave it at that. Maybe this is a discussion for another day, but it's not all on Fox. Even though we like to beat up on Fox at times, a lot, I think a majority of this comes from German football itself and some of the arrogance and misinterpretations going on over there.
And I think that the thing is, Kartik, is I think both you and I are big fans of the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
We love everything from the level of football, the stadium atmospheres, I mean, the television coverage. It's set up to be a success. It's just that the way they're going about doing their business, similar to other leagues, is frustrating because, you know, I mean, they should be doing more, but they're not. Part of it is cultural. I mean, it's definitely the British culture is definitely more in sync with the American culture, but that's just part of it. That's a very small part of it. There's other things they could be doing that they're not. Kartik, let's move on to the listener mailbag. The first one up is from John Brubaker, and I saved this one for you from last week. I was going to ask it last week to Mark, but I thought you would be a better person to answer this one. He says, have TV rights been established for the upcoming CONCACAF Champions League tournament? I'm surprised that the MLS and its TV partners, as far as I can tell, don't put forth much effort to promote the actual competition. I find that these are the most interesting games that MLS teams play, since they provide a barometer for the quality of the league. For fans of international soccer, it can be hard to know why to care about some regular season games in Major League Soccer. The CONCACAF Champions League, on the other hand, feels much more meaningful, but you actually have to do a fair amount of research to follow it and know where to watch it, at least on English-speaking channels. Why is the CONCACAF Champions League not promoted more on TV? And do you guys imagine that it will eventually be given much more attention? Do you think that Major League Soccer could attract more fans off, for example, the Premier League by promoting the CONCACAF Champions League and its rivalries?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and I will tell you, I've been told by sources close to CONCACAF that they have no intention of allowing this past tournament to happen again, where you're having to watch on Facebook Live or on select games on Univision. They want an English language partner. They're apparently going to make it happen, at least for the knockout stages, hopefully for the earlier part of the tournament as well. But again, the proof will be in the pudding if it actually happens. But they do realize that last year was a missed opportunity, particularly with an MLS team coming so close to winning it in Toronto FC. So I would say they at least know and they agree with your critique, John, and they're looking to solve it for this tournament this year and get back on television, English language television.
Next up is JP, and this is not JP Della Camera, by the way, but it's JP, one of our listeners. He says, towards the end of your discussion, Mark Donaldson laid out his vision of what the future of sports viewing or entertainment in general will look like in 5 years with everything available to purchase individually to create your own specialized package. While this may be good for an established sports fan, it could create a downward spiral in fandom in the future. One of the most underrated aspects of someone becoming a fan is serendipity, a child coming across a game on TV and starting that love affair. Once everything becomes on demand via streaming, only the people who already know what they want to watch will take the time to lay out their options and find the correct stream. This model works for regular entertainment where browsing and binge watching is prevalent, but cannot see it working for live sports. Sure, you can watch a game you missed live, but at that point, the score is already known and the highlights are available. This only works for someone who, once again, already knows they want to watch it, but had a conflict, such as a job, etc., and made a point to avoid any media that might spoil the end result before they can watch it later. Not a great way to gain new fans. And I agree with that, Kartik. I think I don't have any stories to tell anecdotally for myself, but I know, I'm sure, I mean, I've heard stories about soccer fans, whether it was in the 80s and flipping through the channels on a Saturday morning and coming across Soccer Made in Germany on PBS with Toby Charles and going like, what the heck is this? And just getting hooked on it. And a lot of those fans are, I mean, kind of been lifelong soccer fans ever since then. And I'm sure with the Premier League too, as far as back in the days of the 90s and going through the Sunshine Channel or some of the Fox Sports channels, flipping through at about midnight and coming across some of the English Premier League highlight shows, which was the only English Premier League coverage on TV at the time. I'm sure there were fans that were hooked on that, or there were, whether it was indoor soccer or even today, the World Cup. The World Cup is the perfect gateway drug. You mean flipping through and coming across it and falling in love with the sport, or getting curious about it enough to continue watching it. But I think JP raises some very good points there, Kartik.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think we see that people bond with the sport through different experiences, but mostly their experiences that come from television more than any other driver right. In terms of people watching professional soccer.
Yeah, which puts soccer at a disadvantage where most of the coverage now is going to streaming and going to on-demand. Well, not on-demand. It's going on to a kind of a behind a paywall versus, you know, whether it's golf or, you know, American football or college football, and you're more likely to come across it that way on television. So, yeah, good points. And the next up is from Scott Yu. And Scott says, I have started listening to your podcast since this past World Cup and have become a quick fan of the pod. All last season, I was able to watch La Liga matches through beIN Sports on Sling TV on demand. This past weekend, when I tried to watch the Real Madrid game at 8 o'clock Eastern, I was only able to watch it on the live beIN Sports channel. The same thing happened when I tried to watch the Bilbao game on Monday evening, 2 hours after the match had ended. I have tried to contact beIN Sports and Sling TV regarding the issue with no response. I was wondering if you had any knowledge regarding the ability to watch La Liga matches on demand through Sling TV for this season. I really enjoy watching La Liga matches on weekends, but I am unable to watch most matches live. Any info you have on this topic would be much appreciated. Friend of the pod from Scott Yu. Good points here by Scott, because personally speaking, I have Sling TV as well as Fubo TV. Sling TV, I don't use the on-demand that much other than something specific where it's like the kids want to watch a movie or I'm looking for something, one program. So I don't usually use the on-demand that much. It has the DVR, so that's an upgrade. I think you have to pay $5 a month extra. Scott, I would recommend that as a way to guarantee that no matter what, you can just set the DVR and record that one game rather than to rely on demand and hope that it appears there. Other than that, that's all I can share. That's all I know. But perhaps, listeners, if you have any thoughts or feedback on this one or some tips, let us know, and we can definitely read those out on air. Last but not least, Kartik from Shell Walker. Hey, guys, I have a question. I have the ESPN Plus app, and I love it. So much soccer for $5 a month. ESPN has done an amazing job with its Serie A production. Do you see them picking up any more leagues as beIN Sports' U.S. coverage rights begin to evaporate? I would love to see them pick up Ligue 1. I have always felt as though the league has been treated as the black sheep of soccer coverage in the States. With ESPN's production and analysis shows, it shows that the league could build more of a foothold here in the States. Kartik, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's definitely happening. I think we're in a mode where ESPN Plus is consolidating a lot of packages. ESPN's comeback in European club football is one of the great stories of the last few years in soccer media, right? Completely out of the business, seemingly. Just a few years ago, they're back, and they're also going to have the UEFA Nations League. They also have UEFA Euro 2020. So they're becoming, again, the go-to place on their various platforms. I think La Liga ends up somewhere else. I think La Liga might end up on Turner and might be actually on television, or if it's on ESPN, it's a lot of TV for ESPN. Maybe Fox gets it. But the other leagues like Liga, I can see on ESPN Plus. I can see the Turkish League on ESPN Plus, and beIN's rights just gradually disappearing if the network doesn't disappear entirely in its own.
Yeah, plus there's the DAZN and Bleacher Report Live. So there'll be some competition there for some of those rights if beIN Sports does go out of business. Again, we don't know what's happening with beIN Sports. They're not responding, but I'm sure it's panic situations there. And it doesn't look good at this moment in time in terms of their future. Now, if you have any questions for us or any feedback, you have some tips or you want some advice, you can always reach us through email at web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post comments on worldsoccertalk.com, and we'll be glad to read those out on air. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, coming into this weekend, we've got plenty of Ligue 1. You've got Major League Soccer. This is the last week, actually, Kartik, before we go into the international break with the UEFA Nations League. And we're actually with the UEFA Nations League. Every single game is going to be on ESPN, either ESPN Plus or the TV channel. So it's going to be a ton of coverage coming up. But going into this weekend, Kartik, with all the options available to them, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.